There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
Right now, a historic moment. We can now project the winner of the presidential race.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
The president-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Donald J. Trump is the president of the United States elect.
This is a political upset of huge, huge magnitude.
Country still divided.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi and welcome, listeners of the 45th Podcast. I am back this week with Susan Simpson. Susan, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Rabia?
I'm doing well. I'm actually in Canada. I'm recording from my in-laws' home in Canada. And actually, just a advance apology to our listeners. In case you hear background noise, I'm here with approximately 600 other relatives. So they'll be thumping and children and all kinds of interruptions that I cannot prevent, but I'll do my best to keep them at bay. So how was your week, Susan?
Busy, but glad to be back.
Good. I'm glad you're back too. Next week we'll be back with Tom and Sarah, I believe. And so, all right, well, we're going to start off with a little bit of a weekly roundup, some of the news that caught my eye this week, and then a couple of bigger issues, including the very, very big news of the grand jury that has been impaneled by Special Counsel Mueller. And Susan's going to tell us all about that. But I want to start off by talking about three what seem like kind of not quite related news pieces, but they actually totally are. The first one is about McMaster. And, you know, General McMaster, as everyone knows, he is National Security Advisor to the President. This past week has been coming under a tremendous amount of fire online. Now, in the last few weeks, he has managed to dismiss a number of folks from the National Security Council who people believe that they were kind of like ideologues, and he believed that they impeded the mission and vision of the president. But he has been running afoul of the right wing by doing this. He dismissed Ezra Cohen Watnick, who actually was appointed by Flynn. He dismissed a couple of other folks, Rich Higgins, Derek Harvey, and these were people who are very close to conservative circles. And he became kind of a target. I mean, Breitbart started the campaign against McMaster. Mike Cernovich, who was a leading figure in the alt-right movement, not just the right wing, but alt-right, he has started saying that McMaster is a deep state plant. They are very demoted. Yeah.
We're living through like a medieval court. Everyone's scheming and knocked their down.
Yeah, it's, and you know what? It's all in the open. It's so public. It's not even like it's like behind closed doors. It's Game of Thrones real life online. Cernovich actually set up a website called McMaster Leaks.
Like that, he really hates that I have to know who Cernovich is now.
You know what? It's true, because he is really not somebody who deserves attention, but this guy's got power. Look, but here's the thing. He's not alone in it, because what's happened is that this campaign is orchestrated. It has been linked to Russian bots. And the top hashtag of 600 Twitter accounts that are actually officially linked to Russian influence operations.
Is it official, though?
It is official. Fire McMaster is the top hashtag.
So I've not seen those officially Russian bots. I know that there's like bot activity for sure, but I didn't know they determined a source.
There is a fantastic website, securingdemocracy.org, that is tracking all of this. And I know the folks behind Securing Democracy. They're folks who've worked in cybersecurity for a long time in national security. It's a legit site. It's a legit folks behind it. And what they're reporting is that there has been a 5,300% increase in the use of the hashtag Fire McMaster by Russian bots and trolls.
Well, the good news is Cernovich's sources appear to be a lot of the ones getting the axe.
They are, but the other side of this coin is if there's enough pressure, maybe Trump will let him go too, because there is chatter about McMaster being let go. And you know what?
This might be going to Afghanistan.
Right, moving him to Afghanistan. Let's listen to some audio just of an interview McMaster gave a couple days ago, and this could explain why.
Does the president have a clear-eyed understanding of the nature of his counterpart in Russia and the nature of the regime?
The nature of the Russian regime?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think everybody is pretty clear on that, right? The nature of the Russian regime is one person, isn't it? I mean, So I think you have an autocratic regime and an individual who's done an extraordinarily effective job at consolidating power. And you have, I think, someone who has acted in a way that you know, I mean, I'm not the best judge of this, maybe, but it is not in the interest of the Russian people. And you see that with the reaction from the world, right, in terms of the sanctions that are placed on Russia and a recognition that Russia must play a much more responsible role in the world if it's going to be a full-fledged, welcomed member of the international community. And we're talking, obviously, about the annexation of Crimea, the invasion of Ukraine here.
The attack on our election.
But also the attack on our election, the very sophisticated campaign of subversion and disinformation and propaganda that is ongoing every day in an effort to break apart Europe and to pit political groups against each other, right? To sow dissension and conspiracy theories.
So you've got this thing happening online where you have this concentrated online campaign to get McMaster fired. At the same time, something really fascinating is happening at the State Department, which is this. Secretary Tillerson is refusing to take the money that Congress has allocated for a center at the State Department called the Global Engagement Center. And I've actually done not some work with them, but I know of them. I've met with them before because of some of the online radicalization work that I was doing. And what the Global Engagement Center does is they are an interagency unit. They're based at a State Department. They were created just a couple years ago. And they basically fight back. It's a small staff, like about 80 folks, but they fight back online propaganda.
They're going to get fired soon too, probably.
Who do you think? Tillerson?
No, the people fighting online propaganda.
They're going to get fired probably because they're not going to get funding. So the money's been earmarked. The money is there. Yeah. It's actually
They have funding. They got the funding. It's the funding not being spent.
They're up. They got the funding. It's parked at the Pentagon, and all Tillerson has to do is ask for it, but he won't do it.
Russia wouldn't like that.
Well, it's been reported that Tillerson's aide, R.C. Hammond, suggested, quote, the money's unwelcome because any extra funding for programs to counter Russian media influence would anger Moscow. And Kremlin-backed news outlet Sputnik actually calls this center, they compare it to George Orwell's Ministry of Truth. So this is fascinating to me. This is, while there's an uptick in Russian online propaganda activity aimed at the administration itself is like, no thanks, we don't want to fight it.
You know who I want to hear from?
Who?
Condoleezza Rice. She went to bat for Tillerson, and he is destroying the State Department. Like, he is trying to, maybe not sabotage it, but certainly cripple it.
Yeah.
What she thinks now? Does she regret what she did?
I don't know, but I didn't actually know that she went to bat. When was this? Was this when he was being confirmed?
She threw his name out there, and Gates did too, and they said that he'd be a great, great Secretary of State.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it would be interesting to get her thoughts. I have a feeling she's probably horrified because, you know, this was not the normal under Bush either.
If you wanted to destroy U.S. foreign powers, this is how you do it.
This is exactly how you do it, yeah. I mean, we talked in last week's episode about the hiring freezes, about the paring down. The State Department is like a shell of itself right now, and it's lost its senior, most experts, people who've been there for decades, you know. And we have many, many, apparently, like satellites all around the world, offices that are just empty right now. We have no diplomats. So I don't know what the long game is here. According to Tillerson, according to the official kind of line, they're just reorganizing and it'll take time, and until then he just wants to put everything on freeze. But the problem is the world does not freeze, it goes on.
I don't know what to make of him. I mean, he's not qualified for the job, so that could just be it. You know, he's not a diplomat, he's a friggin' oil executive, so maybe that's all it is. But
somebody who's an executive, you think can manage things better.
They can pick up a bit better. They could learn, like, on the job, they could at least, like, I mean, I expected screw-ups, but this, like, unexplained dismantling of our foreign policy wing.
Well, I also read that he's an incredible micromanager. So, like, there are just very small details. For example, if a foreign service officer is stationed overseas and is going to be taking their spouse, a lot of times they'll try to find employment for that spouse too within the structure. And those things are kind of like low level decisions, but Tillerson has been making decisions case by case on like by himself on those issues.
On that?
Yeah. About which spouse gets a job and which one doesn't. I don't know
why. That's insane.
He seems like a terrible manager to me. I don't know. I mean, that's not how executives normally work. But these things are also slowing down things at state heavily. So,
hi, listeners. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Well, I know how hard it is to sift through the barrage of information you get every day to find a great talent. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. There's no juggling of emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/45.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about was, actually, I couldn't help but just kind of spit up my food laughing when I saw this, was a series of really humiliating social media posts by Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev against Trump. Have you seen these?
I have. That's, I mean, this world of diplomacy by Twitter is hilarious, but I don't think it's going good places.
Well, this was a smackdown of the first order. I mean, on Twitter, the prime minister said, quote, the Trump administration has shown its total weakness. And, you know, Trump hates weakness. He hates being called weak. It's maybe the most humiliating thing for him. So let me read the tweet. The Trump administration has shown its total weakness by handing over executive power to Congress in the most humiliating way. Now, again, this is in response to the Russian sanctions that were passed by Congress and that Trump could not avoid but sign, right? He had no, it was veto proof, is what I understand. Trump signs these and Medvedev comes back and tweets this. And then on Facebook, he says, quote, a much longer post. I'm just going to read a portion of it. The U.S. president's signing of the package of new sanctions against Russia will have a few consequences. I mean, they are keeping this guy on a short leash. First, it ends hopes for improving our relations with the new U.S. administration. Second, it's a declaration of a full-fledged economic war on Russia. Third, again, the Trump administration has shown its total weakness by handing over executive power to Congress in the most humiliating ways. The U.S. establishment fully outwitted Trump. The president is not happy about the new sanctions, yet he could not but sign the bill. The issue of new sanctions came about primarily as another way to knock Trump down a peg. New steps are to come, and they will ultimately aim to remove him from power. A non-systemic player has to be removed. That's kind of dire.
I'm surprised that Medvedev didn't just call him a cuck.
Yeah, I mean, he basically did, though.
Yeah.
He basically said he's been outwitted, he's weak, and he's going to be removed. And maybe he should be. And so everybody held their breath to see what, you know, this president, he doesn't hold back. You know, when he feels like he's being humiliated, he lets people know. His response was pretty muted.
No response, not muted, just silent.
Well, I mean, silent, yes. He didn't respond directly to any of these messages, but this is what he said. He said, he tweeted, our relationship with Russia is at an all-time and very dangerous low. You can thank Congress, the same people that can't even give us health care. So he put H care, right? I'm assuming that means health care, but you never know. So these three very interesting things happened this week.
I mean, but like looking at these tweets to go back, this is a forever pattern with him. I mean, think about the debates with Hillary, and he couldn't say a mean word about Putin. All they could say was good things. It's bizarre, and there is no valid explanation for why Trump is incapable of saying a mean thing about Russia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, The only two things are that they have something really, really horrible over him, or he's afraid that Putin will have him killed, which I think is possible.
Or pee-pee tape.
A pee-pee tape. I mean, at this point, I'm not going to lie.
Care?
Would anybody care about a pee-pee tape? I feel like a pee-pee tape would come out and Trump would say, well, okay, so it happens. I apologize. It was a boy's thing.
He's not going to apologize for it. He'd be like, look, it was necessary.
It was a necessary pee-pee tape. And you know what? Fox will say, so what? I mean, I actually saw, I think it was a Fox headline or a tweet or something where they said, okay, so maybe there was collusion, so what? I just feel like we are so far gone with his supporters that people will be like, oh, well, pee-pee tape, cool. He's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah. And what I found most disturbing is it seems like in recent, like, it's always been there to some degree, but recently, like, past week or two, the amount of just casual threats of violence I've seen from Trump supporters, like, in the event of Trump being impeached, like, ready to go for war, or, like, we'll fight, like, I've got more guns than they do. Just, like, the talk of, like, civil war and in a disturbing way. I just, on articles, on Twitter, on Facebook, it's almost everywhere.
There's definitely been an uptick, I think, in response to the news about the grand jury being impaneled, which I'm assuming has been ongoing for months now, but it's just kind of been made public. But even that one judge, but I mean, I'm making air quotes as I speak, but Judge Jeanine Pirro, I don't even know how to spell her name, from Fox, she said, she said some pretty inflammatory stuff too, kind of in the same vein, where she's like, you know, there'll be an uprising, like, if this happens, if this goes through. And so, you know, they're trying not just to undermine McMaster, but also Mueller is getting just ripped to bits on the alt-right. Months ago, when he was appointed, GOP leaders like Newt Gingrich actually heavily praised Mueller and said, you know, this guy, he's legit, he's an establishment guy, he knows what he's doing, he's a professional. And today,
Republican.
Right. And today the same people are saying that this guy has, like, got an agenda there are fears. But, you know, actually that gets tied to kind of some of the stuff I want to talk about when it comes to the unveiling. The interesting thing is, while all this craziness is happening, number one, Trump has gone on a 17-day vacation. There's that.
No. It's because there's White House renovations.
Do we know what those renovations are, by the way?
I have no idea.
What is getting renovated? I guess my guess is a secret escape passage to Moscow.
They have to have, like, millions of those to Moscow. Yeah, that they'll have to add in.
Maybe directly to the Russian embassy or something like that, a tunnel. He's been away for 17 days, but you know in the midst of all this, there are people in his administration who are still committed to enacting, like, really kind of scary things in the agenda. I was going to talk about Jeff Sessions and some of the stuff that's happening there.
He's still there. He's hanging in there.
He's hanging in there.
Really given. I mean, the obviously Congress and was not pleased with the talk that Sessions would be gone and stopped. So I think Sessions has clawed his way back up there for a little while.
Yeah,
we'll see.
And I think
it's not Sessions. Like, it's not personal for Sessions at all. I don't think. I think
no.
Trump would be happy to have Sessions there. It's just he cannot handle the Russia investigation.
Yeah.
But he can't end it while Sessions is there.
I mean, he just can't end it, period, is what I'm thinking, right? So I think
Yes, maybe he realized, like, even Sessions gone wouldn't help, so he decided just to find someone.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? He can't, he will not be president. Well, we're going to get into that later.
Well, let's hear about that later. Well, the thing about Jeff Sessions, like, in the last week, and I'm going to get into this actually next week's episode because we have a lot of other stuff to talk about this week, but he announced that DOJ would be going after universities on affirmative action, and also he announced that he's going to be going after leakers, which to me also is a threat to journalists. But I think Jeff Sessions, despite the humiliation, is hanging in there because these are issues that he firmly believes in. He's a career politician. These are agenda items that he's wanted to have impact on for decades, and he's going to, I think, stay there as long as he can. But another kind of very scary component, I mean, like, this guy just freaks me out. Stephen Miller freaks me the hell out. Okay, something about him is not right.
Have you read his, like, his high school and college writings?
No.
He's been a committed racist for a very long time. He's the one who had he at Duke University, he had Islamofascism Awareness Week,
right? I remember that, and I just recently saw a clip of him from high school in which he's railing against janitors. He's saying, why should I have to pick up the trash? We have janitors for that. I don't even know what's going on there. So let me tell you about an epiphany I had a couple of weeks back. Someone left a package of Blue Bottle coffee in the kitchen at my parents' house, and I thought, well, it's coffee. I just need some caffeine, so whatever it is. I've never heard of this before, but I'm just going to give it a shot. So I poured myself a cup, and let me tell you, it completely changed the way that I look at coffee. What I tried was the Hayes Valley Espresso. It is dark, it is rich, and it's got a hint of chocolate. It was amazing. And what I realized is this, that I have been drinking horrible subpar coffee my entire life, but no more. That's because Blue Bottle has an insane dedication to coffee. They take freshness very, very seriously. Blue Bottle works directly with farmers all over the world to source the most delicious and sustainable coffee that they can find. The beans are roasted within 48 hours of your order and they are shipped right to your door. So they arrive at your home at peak freshness. No sitting on a dusty shelf for weeks and weeks. And Blue Bottle has something for everyone's palate, from the light, fruit-forward profile to the deep, chocolatey espressos. And look, I've had plenty of coffee in my day, but Blue Bottle is, without question, the freshest, most delicious coffee I have ever tasted. And now we've got a great offer for our listeners because you can get a discount on your first subscription order. That's right, they have a subscription service. So hurry now to bluebottlecoffee.com/45 for $10 off your first coffee subscription order. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45 for $10 off. One more time, bluebottlecoffee.com/45. So there's been a new immigration bill that was announced in the past week, and this certainly caught my eye. And so I want you, our listeners, to hear to our president introducing the bill.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here today to unveil legislation that would represent the most significant reform to our immigration system in a half a century. I want to thank Senators Tom Cotton and David Perdue for their tremendous work in putting together this historic and very vital proposal. As a candidate, I campaigned on creating a merit-based immigration system that protects U.S. workers and taxpayers, and that is why we are here today, merit-based. The RAISE Act, R-A-I-S-E, the RAISE Act will reduce poverty, increase wages, and save taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. It will do this by changing the way the United States issues green cards to nationals from other countries.
So, this new bill is called the RAISE Act, R-A-I-S-E, and it, quote, replaces the current permanent employment visa framework with a skills-based system that rewards applicants based on their individual merits. For folks who don't know a lot about the U.S. immigration system, how it works, and honestly, a lot of people don't. You can be a citizen here for your entire life, born and raised. You have no idea how immigration works. There's only certain paths to immigration, and one of them is employment-based. And there's a section for highly skilled workers that can get green cards, which are permanent residents, and then years later, 5 years later, you can apply for your citizenship. There are low-skill positions, and that takes much longer. I say low skill as if it's not a skill, but I mean things like the food preparation, child care, and things that don't require basically master's degrees or bachelor's degrees. They're considered low skill, even though I think they still require plenty of skill. Now, this new system that they're setting up, normally the system is that you have an employer that sponsors you, right? The employer has to show a couple of things. That employer, and this is how it's always been, that employer shows that, number one, they have tried to recruit people in the United States, they've tried to recruit citizens and permanent residents, and they have failed. That they are offering you a wage that is competitive with other U.S. wages so that it does not depress wages, okay? And that you're qualified for that position. And this combination of things, it's complicated. I've done these applications. They can take forever, years and years and years, before people can actually finally come here with their families on these visas. So now it's going to be replaced with, according to the White House, this merit system where you get points, okay? So you would get points. You get extra points on your application if you have English language ability, if your job offer is very high paying, how entrepreneurial you're. I don't understand what that means, like your entrepreneurial initiative. If you're getting a job, it's a job, it's not a business.
I'm guessing it means money.
Well, they have set up a new system I mean, I don't know if any of this is going to pass, but there is
it
some.
Won't.
Well, I hope it doesn't. But here's the thing. One of the biggest change, I mean, the big broader changes here is they want to cut legal immigration, not illegal. You know, all this time, the talk from the right has been about illegal immigrants and crime, right? This is not about illegal immigration. This is about legal immigration. They want to cut it by half, okay? Now, when it comes to legal immigration, we're talking about employment, but the vast majority of legal immigrants, people who come here legally because they're sponsored, are not because of employers. It's because of family members. And the system currently allows you to sponsor your siblings. It takes 10 years, by the way, for those people to get visas. 10 plus years. Siblings, spouses, children, and parents. And that's it. You cannot sponsor grandparents. You cannot sponsor aunts and uncles and cousins. So don't get... Like, you know, people are saying that kind of stuff online. It's not true. People have never been able to sponsor them. And you have to be a citizen yourself to sponsor most of these categories or a green card holder. Now, what they're going to do is they want to end something called chain migration, meaning no more siblings and no more parents. So only spouses and children who are not adults. So your kid has to be a minor. And if you take that combined with giving preference to people from English speaking, you know, who have English language skills, what it's going to look like is that you're going to have a drastic change in what the immigrants coming to this country look like. It's going to be more people from Europe, and it's going to be...
Which is the point.
What's that?
That's the point. It's not about wages, not about ever... Like, they can't even defend the reasons they're giving.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, look, the pretext here is that it's the economy, the defending American workers. But you know what? All the experts are saying that these new changes, if they're actually implemented, are going to have like really devastating impacts on the economy. They want to cut out all these low skilled jobs. Well, who's going to take those jobs? You know, number one, who's going to take like the agricultural jobs, the childcare jobs, the lawn care jobs? Nobody. Americans are not stepping up. Millennials are not stepping up. They don't want these low wage jobs, to be honest.
It's going to be a net loss for our economy, a big one too. And they know this. I mean, you saw Miller's press conference, if you can call it that, right?
It was crazy. It was actually batshit crazy.
It was batshit's like the only word I can think of to sum that up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, attacking the Statue of Liberty is definitely what we want our White House to be doing.
Yeah.
So one of the reporters asked him, like, hey, what are the facts you're going off of here?
And right. Give me the statistics. And he had a fit. He couldn't actually name the statistics because they don't actually
exist. It's common sense.
Well, look, like you said, Miller is... This is this particular bill. I mean, this is this plus the Muslim ban, all this immigration stuff. This is all Miller, I think. You know, he is a committed racist. He really believes in like social engineering to like, you know, I think fight back against the browning of America. One of the things that the president said during the press conference was that this was interesting. He said that these immigrants who are coming in are taking jobs away from minorities in America, meaning away from black people in America, okay, and other immigrants who are already here. He said, quote, they take jobs away from hardworking African Americans and Hispanic citizens. And also, quote, the RAISE Act was named after its intent to raise the wages of native-born American workers by reducing the supply of lower-skilled immigrants. Now, but here's the thing. The last three times that Congress tried to do this, they tried to restrict immigration to raise wages, it actually failed. And this has been reported by the Cato Institute. They've actually done some great reports on what the impact of this would be. So you can check out their website. And then he repeats this lie, which is a very common lie amongst anti-immigrant folks, which is the welfare lie.
The RAISE Act prevents new migrants and new immigrants from collecting welfare and protects U.S. workers from being displaced. And that's a very big thing. They're not going to come in and just immediately go and collect welfare. That doesn't happen under the RAISE Act. They can't do that.
Yeah, this was, for me, this is just, he's doubling down on this now lately, not just in this case, but in other sort of similar instances where he's taking a thing that's already a law, like definitely existed for a while, and he claims credit for it.
He's acting like immigrants are coming here and applying for welfare and just getting it. And it's never been the case.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Immigrants cannot get welfare.
A few times, part of it is that Trump is just so ignorant about what he's talking about. He doesn't always use the right words. And one of the rallies he was giving, he did phrase it differently. That made me wonder. I think it's possible that they're not just going, I mean, they can't just be banning immigrants from getting, you know, welfare because they can't. I think they're trying to take away welfare services from U.S. American children who have parents that are immigrants.
Oh, that's interesting. How do you... Go ahead.
He phrased it as like households. Like, we can't have immigrant-headed households receiving welfare benefits.
Oh, wow.
So I think it's the plan to make sure that, you know, a starving American child can't eat if their parents are immigrants.
I see what you're saying. So what he's thinking about are people who come here as immigrants. They have children here who are now U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Preventing those U.S. Citizen children from being able to collect any benefits.
Yeah.
That might be the case.
Or it could be Trump saying things the wrong way. But at one point,
you never know with him.
Yeah. But he said that at one point. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Is that what he's actually trying to do here?
You know what? That makes actual total sense. But the thing is, many of these kinds of benefits, like, you know, that are given to children, like reduced price lunches and food assistance, they're actually, the state decides that. And in fact, it all, like, every state has a different policy on this thing. And in some states, the Dreamers, the DACA immigrants, H-1B workers, there are some temporary immigrants who can apply for very specific things like food assistance and reduced lunches, but they don't qualify for the vast majority of benefits like food stamps in general, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. And that's true even though many of them and most of them, actually all the legal ones, are contributing to the system. They just can't take back from it. They have to wait even after they get a green card for a long time. And by the way, and Susan, you know, did you sponsor your husband when he came from Australia?
I did. K-1.
K-1. You did the K-1. Okay, see, I sponsored my Canadian husband, all right? Now, in both, I'm sure you had to do it. I had to do it. We had to show that we have the financial means to support the person we're sponsoring.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I was a very young attorney at that time, so it was, like, kind of hard.
Right. You have to – so when immigrants come here, they actually have to show that there's financial – like, somebody's going to take care of them. We have to – the sponsors have to sign an affidavit of support. You can't just show up and be like, hey, I'm here. Give me some money. It doesn't work like that. So anyway, but that lie persists. So Trump might be getting rid of welfare, but it didn't exist to begin with. Now, you mentioned the press conference, and Stephen Miller was given the mic after Trump, and he, you know, was really crazy and animated. And by the way, he might be the next White House communications director. But there was this very interesting exchange.
Laugh,
you should, you know, it'll be entertaining, I suppose. I mean, we had Scaramucci and. Spicy seems very normal now, but he's gone. So here's this exchange between Miller and CNN's Jim Acosta.
This whole notion of, well, they could learn, you know, they have to learn English before they get to the United States. Are we just going to bring in people from Great Britain and Australia?
Jim, actually, I have to honestly say, I am shocked at your statement that you think that only people from Great Britain and Australia would know English. It's actually, it reveals your cosmopolitan bias to a shocking degree that in your mind, no, this is an amazing moment that you think only people from Great Britain or Australia would speak English is so insulting to millions of hardworking immigrants who do speak English from all over the world. Jim, have you honestly never met an immigrant from another country who speaks English outside of Great Britain and Australia? Is that your personal experience?
Of course there are people who come in.
But that's not what you said. And it shows your cosmopolitan bias.
Now, in this exchange, I mean, I thought it was fascinating because he completely does like this jujitsu. Miller does jujitsu about where he flips the entire script and accuses Acosta of being racist. But one thing I didn't realize as I was listening to this was he uses the word cosmopolitan twice. And I didn't know that that's like a dog whistle,
rootless,
a signal.
Cosmopolitan.
What's that?
Rootless cosmopolitan. Yeah.
Do you know that that's a signal for something? Did you know that?
Well, I mean, the traditional use of that is like against Jews. And Steve Miller is Jewish. So like one, he definitely has to be aware of where this comes from. But two, it is crazy that he's using it. And three, like really? Cosmopolitan is an insult?
I actually never knew that this was like an anti-Semitic thing. I thought the word cosmopolitan just means like elitist and, you know, I had never known that this was kind of used as a slur or a dog whistle against Jews. But you're right. Apparently, white nationalist groups, they've adopted the term cosmopolitan like it's part of their lexicon. And, you know, they attack people they see as globalists, which is another... Yeah. Real, I guess, derogatory thing to call somebody.
I didn't understand I meant Jewish for a long time. Like, I saw the, you know, last year, I guess now, when they had the articles coming out about how globalist was like a word they were using. I did not realize it was like shorthand, or not, I guess longhand for Jew.
I also didn't know Stephen Miller's Jewish. Do you think he really is Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah, so apparently, I mean, like, if you do a little bit of research on cosmopolitan, on the word cosmopolitan and its connection to right-wing nationalists, there's a lot there. And so I thought that was kind of scary because I didn't realize it at the time that he is actually kind of, you know, even though this bill doesn't pass, I feel like these are, like, signals the administration is sending to their to parts of their base. Maybe it's in response to like really, really low approval ratings, which are like ridiculously low at this point, around 32-33% last time I checked. And then you have this exchange where Miller goes after Acosta on the difference between like why this bill is different than the issue of illegal immigration.
Surely, Jim, you don't actually think that a wall affects green card policy. You couldn't possibly believe that, do you? Actually, the notion that you actually think immigration is at a historic low, the foreign-born population in the United States today, Jim,
talking about how border crossings.
Do you really? I want to be serious, Jim. Do you really at CNN not know the difference between green card policy and illegal immigration?
You know, we kind of almost talked about this like a little bit earlier, but basically, you know, I didn't see this coming, to be honest, that they would be cutting legal immigration in half. And it all being about green cards, which is what he talks about in this clip, green cards and permanent residence. But, you know, what I realize is that it's about green cards because green cards turn into citizenship and citizenship turns into voters. And so right now, this is if they can get this passed, which hopefully they can't. But if they can, this is all really about engineering generations of voters to look very different than the trends are going today. So that was a very broad overview of the immigration bill. It's set off all kinds of alarms. And I was telling Susan earlier today that I probably will be jumping back into the immigration practice ring later.
Plenty of work for you.
There'll be plenty of work. Yeah, I understand that there will be one way or the other. And, you know, times like this, though, I'm really upset that, you know, we had 8 years with President Obama and we weren't able to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And now we're dealing with this kind of stuff. So. Oh, one more thing before I turn it over to you, and that's this. We didn't talk about the affirmative action stuff, and we'll get into depth on that. In the affirmative action stuff, where Sessions is saying DOJ might look into like suing universities that they have either racial quotas or they're basically privileging students of color over white students, even though they have equal merit. What's interesting is in that case, what they're doing is they're pitting. They're taking the side. There are lawsuits by Asian American students on these issues. So they're pitting immigrants and Asian Americans against blacks and Latinos on that issue. But and on the immigration issue, it's a reverse. They're telling African Americans, Latinos, these immigrants are coming from overseas and they're taking away your jobs. They're really trying to play these groups against each other on these two different issues. And it's really kind of remarkable to watch this happening. So,
but notice what they're not doing. They're not going against the affirmative action that is pretty prevalent in higher education, which is to make sure we have roughly equal men and women.
This is true. And that's a really interesting article that was written by, I believe, a professor about that, is that women are just, they outperform male applicants in so many different ways that, you know, men just get a heck of a pass just to get into university, whereas, you know, women's metrics are like off the charts as compared to men. So,
yeah, we would have very unequal campuses if it was based purely
on merit.
And also, but at the same time, it shouldn't be based purely on numbers. It's not what we're going for. It's not what colleges are going for. I mean, it's a complicated area in general, but the idea that it's somehow wrong to consider non-SAT scores and non-grade point stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, on both the issues, the affirmative action, and again, I want to get into depth on that in our next episode, and immigration. I think what's really happening here is the administration is actually addressing kind of the white grievances. You know, in after the election, after Trump won, over half of Trump voters actually said that they felt that whites face a lot of discrimination when it comes to jobs and opportunities. And I think both of these, what we're seeing, these shifts in policies, are trying to appease those voters who feel like those white Trump voters who feel like they're being discriminated against. There's a great piece in the New York Times called The Policies of White Resentment, and I highly recommend that our listeners check it out. All right, so Susan, now we're going to turn it over to you for, I think, some of the biggest media news that came out last week, and that is grand jury.
The grand jury, yeah. I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's sort of an affirmation of where this is headed. I mean, first of all, back up a bit, a grand jury is the first stage in the criminal process, as opposed to, like, the petit jury, which is what you typically think of when you think of a jury, the 12 people sitting in a box deciding after a trial. What's happened now is Mueller's team is now basically opened a grand jury investigation in D.C. And that doesn't mean they're about to charge someone. It doesn't mean they're about to have, like, a, you know, an indictment. It's mostly a pragmatic tool in that you can do investigations through grand jury. Grand juries can issue subpoenas. They can call on witnesses to testify. A prosecutor can't do that. Like, a prosecutor can't be like, I'm going to investigate. I'm going to call up someone and tell them to come talk to me. If they don't want to talk, you can't do anything about it unless you have a grand jury.
Okay, so let me ask you a question then. So the prosecutor can call the grand jury, okay? You have a group of people there who are part of the grand jury. Is it that group that decides what they'll subpoena and who they'll call, or is it then the prosecutor who decides? How does it work?
I mean, in practice, I mean, I think there's a valid argument to be made that grand juries may have outlived their usefulness. In theory, the grand jury can do it. Like, in theory, the grand jury can do a lot of things. In practice, it's the prosecutor.
Okay. So they can issue a subpoena. So he's basically using this as a tool to, like, get all the stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get the taxes. Can he get the taxes?
Which is how we've learned, I think, that the grand jury exists, because once they issue a subpoena, it goes to someone and they can talk. Like, that's when it leaks. Now, we've had a grand jury investigation ongoing for months now. That one was impaneled down in EDVA, Eastern District of Virginia, in Alexandria. And that was looking into Flynn, the general and ex National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn.
Yeah.
And we don't know when exactly that one started up. We know that it's been at least a few months now. I think, like, April is when it seems like, if not earlier. And Mueller's now in charge of that one, too, and as well as the Manafort investigation. But what's interesting is that they now have this one in D.C. ongoing, too.
Why do you think is there a significance between D.C. and Virginia?
Yeah, there could be. We don't know enough now to know. I mean, I saw one article speculating it was for convenience. It's closer to their offices, which I don't really buy. I mean, yes, traffic's terrible here, but, like, it's terrible everywhere. Kennedy Alexandria isn't, like, that much worse.
Right.
But it could be, again, that, like, this is because they're looking into acts that occurred here in D.C.
Like secret meetings?
Yeah. I was kind of wondering if they'd maybe try, like, New York or something, if it was going to be mostly, like, financial crimes, because that's where Trump was and presumably they were committed. And they're definitely investigating those. But they've decided to go for D.C. for their venue here. And I'd really love to know more, too, about what the status of the Mike Flynn grand jury is. Because with the Mike Flynn one, we know it was looking into sort of two major areas, and it may have expanded beyond that. But we know they were looking into the sort of the Russia contacts that he had and lied about, like the fee he got from Russia Today for speaking in 2015 and not disclosing some of his forms, but also his private lobbying contract with a group called Inovo, which is super shady and definitely going to result in big problems.
That's when he was, like, lobbying for Turkey, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he's just sort of piled up problems for himself there. Like, he's dead in the water on those. I mean, he might not get charged. That's why people are speculating he might cut a deal, because, like, it's so blatant there. He either has to cut a deal or do something, because it's not going to be hard to make a case against him.
Cutting a deal might involve, I'm assuming, turning state's witness.
Yes, which is why people are what was it, in April? Apparently Trump sent a text message to Flynn saying, stay strong. That's code for don't snitch on me, bro.
I will kill you.
So we've got a lot of fronts going on now. So the grand jury is big news. It's exciting and all that. But it kind of, we knew it was heading that way based on Mueller's team. He has been ramping up his staff. Like, he is doing, like, the real dream team of lawyers here.
He's hired a lot of people, right?
Like, this is, like, the all-star team if you're going to investigate the, like, financial scandal of the decade.
Mm.
And, again, there's going to be a lot of questions about scope of the investigation and how far afield it can go. And the thing is,
yeah, Trump's so that's business, something yeah. that keeps getting challenged, and I'm watching in conservative media, is that Mueller is overstepping his boundaries in terms of, like, his mandate in the investigation. And I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought the investigation can lead to whatever it leads to.
I mean, that's our experience from the 90s, right?
Right. Right.
And that's, like, I guess that's, there's good arguments that it shouldn't be a blank check investigation. But at the same time, the financial crimes are a central part of what seems to be going on here, if something's going on here with Russia. So that's, like, necessary for an investigation. But of course, Trump's business empire is so shady that there's no way it can withstand investigation. It just can't. It's been openly shady for decades.
They'll find something, right?
They had to. Like, you can just look at any business and look at it and go, this is messed up. Yeah. He doesn't do due diligence. He doesn't actually check his partners. He's constantly getting into deals with unverified and extremely shady people who are engaged in money laundering operations. Mm. It's a mess. Like, his business is a walking FCPA violation.
Right. And I feel like Kushner is going to be in some deep doo-doo. I feel like
Kushner is definitely.
Yeah. As negligent as Trump is in doing his due diligence, I feel like Kushner is not that negligent, but I think he willfully has engaged in stuff that's like, you know.
See, he and Ivanka pretend to be all like sophisticated, but they're just as dumb.
And progressive, right?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting in that Wall Street Journal transcript that got leaked to Politico. The Wall Street Journal asked Trump about pardons, and he gives a rambling answer about Kushner.
Hmm. Well, so let me ask you this then. Okay. You said there may or may not be an indictment. You know, the saying goes, you know, you could indict a ham sandwich. The bar for an indictment is very low. So I'm assuming there will be an indictment on something.
No, we can't assume that because can't even tell. This is for investigation. So theoretically, they could investigate and find nothing and there's nothing there. It doesn't mean that they're being asked. The grand jury is not being asked right now to indict someone. Mm-hmm. It might come to that. But you can't assume that there will be an indictment because there's a grand jury investigation.
So let me ask you this. Let's say there's no indictment. Does that mean that no charges can be brought then?
I mean, if Mueller concludes that there should be no charges brought, then there won't be.
Well, if the grand jury says, well, we don't think charges should be brought, we're not going to issue an indictment, Mueller feels, I mean, he's the prosecutor. He might be like, no, I think charges should be, like, is he somehow, I don't know how the process works in a criminal.
Oh, if you can't, if you don't get the grand jury indictment, then it's a no-go.
You're done. Okay.
Typically. In this case, it would be. But unless you are a cop that just shot someone, you're going to get indicted. Like, that's the only situation which you can't.
I shouldn't laugh at that.
Basically guarantee an indictment.
What is the timeline we're looking at, you think?
I think that, I mean, Mueller is a methodical guy, but the team's, you know, I'd like to think that they're trying to do everything they can to speed it up, but it's a very complicated, financial record-heavy investigation. So, basically, we don't know.
Don't know.
But at the same time, Trump is trying very hard to get rid of Mueller. So Mueller must know. I have to believe that Mueller's aware that if things start falling apart, he needs to be able to speed up his investigation quickly and present a case to the grand jury and ask for indictment if it's going that way.
If Mueller's fired, does the whole thing really fall apart? I mean, isn't there an entire team who can just step in and keep it going?
No, because Mueller, I mean, that's the DOJ is the one who chooses who to investigate, who to try. Like, so if there's no special counsel, there's no special investigation.
Interesting. Okay.
So, and it, you know, how it goes down will depend on how Trump tried to fire him. But I think Trump is going to, because I think Trump knows that his presidency cannot withstand what Mueller's doing.
Right.
Because there will be leaks too. Like, I have no problem saying Trump has definitely engaged financial crimes. And they're going to be presented to the grand jury, and the witnesses someone's going to leak it, and it's going to get out. So even before we get to the indictment stage, this is going to be a very drastic threat to his presidency.
Yeah.
He's going to try and get rid of Mueller.
The threats against Mueller came when Mueller said, basically, that, yeah, he's going to be looking into his business stuff. That's when the president got really, it wasn't even about the collusion and Russia stuff so much as, you know, the election stuff so much as it seemed like he got really, really upset and triggered when Mueller said, we're going to be looking at the business stuff too. And that's when he started talking about the possibility of firing him. There are still the other investigations, the Senate and House investigation. I have heard a chatter that the Senate Intel Committee is seeking to have the author of that dossier, that, you know, infamous dossier, Christopher Steele, have him come and testify. And I don't know how far that's been advanced, but they're not done with their investigation either. So.
Yeah, this is.
One thing we didn't cover actually was Jared Kushner. I believe he did testify, but behind closed doors.
We don't know what he said.
We have no idea what he said. All right. No leaks, unfortunately, there. All right. Well, Susan, hopefully you can keep us updated on any other news that comes out of the investigation with Trump. And one thing, I think I do want to quickly mention this, and I'm not giving our president props for it, but I think it's worth mentioning because the last couple weeks have been kind of hairy with North Korea. We talked about North Korea last week, too. There has been kind of a major resolution by a unanimous resolution by the UN Security Council, which is kind of a big deal because it means Russia and China both also voted for sanctions against North Korea. And the president has also tweeted about this, I think, a few times now, how it's a big deal. Nobody's reporting it, although everybody is reporting it. And so this can have a major impact on North Korea, you know, and again, the real kind of interesting thing here is the fact that Russia and China both voted in support of those sanctions because they are a huge trading partner. They are the biggest trading partners with North Korea.
Yeah. And they have a lot of skin in the game, too. I mean, their border is with North Korea. So
they do. So anyhow, one little tiny win for the administration. Good for him. Make America great. Make America great again.
He's not gotten into nuclear war yet.
Not quite yet. This might just do it. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. Thanks to our listeners. And we will be back in 1 week. And we'll have a lot more to talk about by then, I'm sure. You guys have a great week. Thanks for tuning in again this week. And we really hope to keep coming to you weekly. But in order to do that, we do need your support, so please consider becoming a patron of the 45th Podcast. To do that, just go to our Patreon page. It's www.patreon.com/45thpod. Again, that's patreon.com/45thpod, and Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. A big thank you, of course, to everybody who helps make this show possible, beginning with our fantastic sponsors. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you to Ray Gaines for our audio production, our kick-ass producer, Mithal Thelhan. Thank you. You are the best. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Please do check out our website at www.45thpod.com. And you can reach us and leave us your listener messages, which we love to check into, at 202-670-8345. Again, it's 202-670-8345. Thanks again. See you guys next week.
Can we call this episode Master of the Universe?
What's that?
Can we call this episode McMaster of the Universe?
I love it, actually. McMaster of the Universe, that's great. Yeah, I don't know how long he's going to last. But so you've got this thing.